Pulled Stitches and Surgical Scars, written by Very Rach and read by Flower Parish. This is a Marvel and DC crossover fic, rated for teen and up audiences, featuring the relationship Bucky Barnes / Clint Barton / Jason Todd. This is part two of the Cheap Disposable Lighters series. Abridged summary. A revelation about himself leaves Bucky wondering how it will affect the shape of his life.
Think again when the hand you wanna hold is a weapon and you're nothing but skin. Oh, cause I keep digging myself down deeper. I won't stop till I get where you are. I keep running, I keep running, I keep running. They say I may be making a mistake. I would have followed all the way, no matter how far.
Jason is better, except he's not. He moves through the world with a carapace of wariness clinging to him that Bucky hates, although he didn't know him before, doesn't know if it's new or if he was always like this. On edge, constantly waiting for something to happen, unable to shake the nervous watchfulness from his bones. Bucky suspects not. Jason is young, healthy, with clever eyes and a quickness to his wit and temper that makes the anxiousness cloaking him feel like it doesn't belong. It's what's left of his death, Clint says, when Bucky asks him about it. It's clinging on to him. Bucky doesn't ask again. In any case, the remnants of death shrouding his every waking moment make Jason a poor candidate for release into the general population. S.H.I.E.L.D. shows up with talk of repatriating him to Gotham, which Clint ends abruptly with a shower of sparks that hover in the air in the shape of a hand flipping the bird. Bucky snort laughs and holds the door for the unfortunate agents. Jason gets a weird look on his face, like he can't decide if he's pleased or confused, and Bucky's mirth drains out of him again. Maybe I should go back to Gotham, Jason says. I got business to take care of, and waiting never made a problem better. Clint near enough growls at him, has to walk away before he says something he regrets. It's not that I know what you should do, Clint tells Jason later that night. The three of them are hanging out on Clint's fire escape, where there's the merest hint of a breeze cutting through the otherwise unbearably humid air. But I don't think you should go back there yet. Jason shrugs and takes a swig of beer from the bottle in his hand. It's dripping with condensation, drops falling off and rolling down his throat as he swallows. Bucky can't look away from it, the way the moisture gleams on his skin, catching the last of the sun's golden rays. The heat of the day is finally draining away, and Bucky is just starting to feel like he can breathe properly again, when Jason accidentally lifts the lid off the box of his life, tips a bunch of angry fire ants inside, and slams it shut again before picking it up and rattling it. Metaphorically speaking, that is. You want to take a picture, witch, Jason says, something like anger, or maybe just impatience, scratching under the surface of his skin. It'll last longer. Bucky looks away, flustered, embarrassed at being caught staring. He opens his mouth to mutter something about how they don't know that. Who knows, now, how long Jason will last? How long does any man last who's cheated death the way Jason has? When the other thing Jason said catches up to him. I'm not a witch, Bucky says. Clint's the one with magic. I'm just here because he hasn't kicked me out yet. The pause that follows is weird and tinged with an emotion Bucky can't name. He's suddenly, viscerally, reminded of the time one of his sister's friends told her they'd seen the guy she was sweet on dancing with another girl. Maybe they're just friends, Becca had said, hope papering over the pain in her voice, and Bucky's mother had smiled sadly at her, not saying anything, with the exact same tone of silence as Clint and Jason have now. Clint, Bucky asks, when it's been too long since anyone has spoken, and he's starting to feel restless with it. Bucky doesn't use his magic, Clint says finally, firmly, like he's ending this conversational topic, like there isn't anything more to be said. Jason, you're welcome here for as long as you want to stay, But if you do want to visit Gotham, or anyone there, we can help. No, shut up, what the fuck? Bucky says, and there's panic in his voice. He can hear it. He can feel it, inside him, rising up like a tide at night, thick and black and glistening, and swallowing everything in its path. What do you mean? Your magic, your power, Clint tells him. It's okay that you don't use it. You know I don't care. It's not that I don't want to, it's that I can't. Okay, that's fine, Clint says, in the same tone of voice he uses to calm Lucky down when someone lets off fireworks too close to their apartment. I'm not a purist, you know that. If you can't practice, you don't have to. No, shut up, you're not. Listen to me. It's not that I don't use my magic. There's no magic for me not to use, Bucky spits out, frustrated. What? Clint asks. And they've been together for a couple of years now, and friends for a while before that. So Bucky knows Clint. He's an easy guy to know, if you care to try and read him. Friendly and kind. Lets people in without meaning to. Sure, he panics later and pulls away, and God forbid he ask for help when he needs it, but none of that makes him a mystery to understand. The point is, Bucky knows him, and so he knows the confusion on his face right now, in this moment when Bucky is telling him that he isn't magical. That confusion is genuine. Clint's one of the best witches on the Eastern Seaboard, strong and talented and intuitive, and without the streak of arrogance or superiority that can come with being extraordinarily good at something normal people venerate. He's kind, in a way not a lot of magic users are. Bucky's never known him to be unnecessarily cruel. I'm not... Clint. Clint, what are you talking about? Bucky asks carefully, slowly, as if there's anything he can say that will make what Clint's about to say untrue. The thing he knows Clint is about to say, the awful, sticky thing moving towards him, unavoidable, as inevitable as the sunrise. I'm sorry, Buck. Did you really not know? The best anyone can figure is that maybe Hydra did something, woke up something that had been latent, or put something in him that wasn't there before. Bucky stretches his left arm and feels the now familiar crackle of magic running through it, faintly warm, so close to something alive. It's just in his arm, he can't feel it anywhere else. How was he supposed to know? I thought you knew, Clint tells him, again and again. How could I know? Bucky asks, and nobody has any answers to that. It's never happened before, as far as they can tell. I didn't have it as a kid. Now I do, but I can't feel it. How the fuck was I supposed to know? You're impossible, one of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s witches tells him, after she's spent 2 days running what seems like the same test over and over and over again, until Bucky puts his foot down. I was already impossible, Bucky says. Half the people I know are impossible. This is something more impossible than the impossible. You were already impossible, the witch agrees. This is just, like, extra spicy flavoring. Is that your professional judgment? Bucky asks. The witch shrugs, a little frustrated, a little lost. Yeah, pretty much. I'm sorry, Jason tells him a few days later. Bucky's in the kitchen, waiting on Clint's ancient, overworked coffee machine to sputter to life. Jason shows up on silent footsteps, slips next to him, doesn't look at his face. Bucky grunts and reaches for a second mug, lining it up next to his on the counter. He watches Jason work a fingernail into a chip on the edge of the counter, clacking against the formica. For, you know, all of it. It's fine, not your fault, Bucky tells him gruffly. He can practically feel the tension leaving Jason's body at Bucky's lackluster absolution. Or maybe he really can feel it. Maybe that's what his magic does, he thinks. You gonna learn to use it? Jason asks. He takes the proffered mug of coffee, wraps both hands around it, and holds it close to his chest, a magpie with a treasure. Bucky shakes his head. He doesn't mean no exactly, but he doesn't have a better answer, or at least not one that doesn't make his skin itch like it's half a size too small on a hot day. He doesn't know if he could learn to cast, doesn't know if that's a thing that could be done. Clint said he's been casually seeping magic for multiple decades, so it's unlikely that trying to use it in a more targeted way will have any untoward effects. Well, no. What he actually said was, "It's probably not going to blow you up now, right?" Which is even less reassuring. In any case, it feels as if the magic has been stuffed into him like he's some kind of occult Christmas turkey, and the thought of using it feels a lot like tempting fate. "No, not now at least," Bucky says. He eyes Jason, trying to judge his reaction, but he hasn't learned to read him yet. "You gonna stay?" Jason just shrugs, anyway, and hums vaguely under his breath, so Bucky is none the wiser. Bucky likes Jason. He likes him a lot, in fact, likes him in a more than vaguely thinking about talking to Clint about it way. But Jason is only newly undead, and with the shrouds of his death clinging to his shoulders, apparently. Bucky's taking that on trust. He hasn't used his so-called magic enough to see it the way Clint can yet, so he has to console himself by looking at Jason's regular, mundane, muscular, shapely shoulders instead. As much as Bucky likes him, though, he likes Clint more, and while they have an open relationship in theory, in practice, Bucky hasn't actually taken advantage of that fact since he met Clint. He hasn't wanted to. Clint is more than enough for Bucky, in every way he can think of needing someone. Bucky loves him so much it hurts, sometimes, an ache that lives deep in his soul. Jason, though, Bucky thinks he might like Jason in a way that has nothing to do with needing him. He just wants him because he wants him. There's probably more to it than that. There might be some other reason he feels drawn to someone who's cheated death and isn't handling it all that well, but Bucky's not interested in examining it too deeply right now. He's still feeling a little frayed, a little blindsided by the whole magic thing. He doesn't have the energy to start poking at things that are best left alone. Maybe he should have said something before Jason disappeared, though. It's a little bit anticlimactic, as disappearances go. Clint gets a bead on him almost immediately, although he has to track him through Turkmenistan, via Venezuela and Ethiopia, first. When he finally pins him down, he's in Switzerland, which gets him points for style and unexpectedness. "Unexpectosity," Clint says, unhelpfully. They go to fetch him back, and it's not until Clint's landing the Quinjet that Bucky wonders if their retrieval mission will be welcomed. The warehouse is empty but for a layer of dust and grime on the ground, and the odd bit of detritus here and there, nails and pieces of wood that hint at its time as a working storage facility. Shards of glass lie on the cement floor below all the windows, whose empty frames do nothing to protect against the chill wind. It whistles and bites at Bucky, the bitter cold nipping at his ears and at the edge of his thoughts so that he can hardly concentrate on anything else. Jason is standing in the middle of the cavernous space, hands curled into tight fists and a look on his face like he wants to punch through the universe itself. Dark, spiky shapes radiate around him. It takes Bucky a moment to realize that Jason is at the epicenter of an explosion. Now he knows what to look for, he can see its marks everywhere. Burn marks at the top of the outside walls, where whatever goods were stored there have been burnt away. Twisted metal in what's left of the window frames, melted into angry, useless shapes. Jason, frozen at the heart of the warehouse, bloodied knuckles where he's scraped his hands on the ground. Jason has an autopsy scar. Bucky's seen it, couldn't not see it, when he was helping Jason wash and dress himself, and hasn't avoided thinking about what it means. It's never felt quite as important as it does right now, though. Here, in this place, Bucky can feel the weight of Jason's pain building inside him, so heavy it feels like it's pulling at his stitches, threatening to burst out of him. "Who did this?" Bucky asks. "The Joker," Jason says. "I'm going to kill him." He says it defiantly, tips his chin up, stares at Bucky with his jaw set like he's just waiting for Bucky to try and stop him. "Let me know if you want some help with that," Bucky says. Jason doesn't smile, exactly, but there's a lightness to his expression that makes Bucky think it might not be that far away. "Thanks for coming to get me," Jason says later. They're in a chalet, because Clint has ideas about Switzerland that seem to have been gleaned from a Richard Scarry book he read in kindergarten, and Bucky is heavily invested in Clint getting to keep the few decent childhood memories he has left. They're in a hot tub in the chalet because Bucky's struggling to warm the chill in his bones. The visit to the warehouse has lingered, sticking to his skin like gum on a shoe, unwanted and hard to shake off. "Of course," Clint drawls. He reaches out, pats Jason's knee under the water, stretches ostentatiously before settling back against Bucky's side. Bucky watches Jason watching Clint, and the way his muscles twist and pull as he stretches, flinging a little spray of water droplets around. "At this point, you're gonna have to tell us if you genuinely don't want us to follow you," Bucky tells him, draping an arm around Clint's shoulders. He idly strokes his collarbone, lazy fingers sweeping back and forth with no apparent thought behind them. He very much enjoys the way Jason's eyes are tracking the movement. There's something there, or there will be soon. Not quite yet. Jason is still too full of rage, of the violence banging inside his ribcage, longing for a way out. Of death, the pain and loss of which he wears like a cape, hanging heavily on his shoulders. Bucky can see it sometimes, the shadows swirling around Jason, a dark red mist at the edges of his sight. It disappears when he tries to look right at it, but it's always there. He can't remember when he started to see it. He wonders if he can make it go away. "Give me your hand," Clint says suddenly. Bucky obliges, holding it out of the water, facing the sky. Clint traces a pattern over his palm, his touch light enough to tickle slightly. "Do you want to feel it?" They haven't talked about his magic for a few days. Bucky knows Clint has been trying to give him space, give him time to think about it, about how he feels about it, as if that's gonna make a difference. He appreciates the effort anyway. "Sure." "You want me to go?" Jason asks, staring at the two of them with softer eyes than Bucky's yet seen on him. "No," Bucky says, at the same time as Clint tells him to stay and hooks his foot around Jason's ankle. He could shake it free, of course, as easily as breathing. Jason stays. Clint holds his hand over Bucky's and wiggles his fingers dramatically, which is 100% unnecessary, and then kisses his palm, which might be necessary or might be more showmanship. It's hard to tell with Clint. He's decades out of the circus now, but some of the things he learned there took root, and deeply. It starts slowly, a warm buzzing under his skin, which he should maybe have hated, but actually feels soothing. And then the buzzing turns into a throbbing, pulsing sensation, and the warmth remains, like his blood is simmering in his veins. "What do I do with it?" Bucky asks helplessly. "Whatever you want." Clint hates Gotham. Bucky doesn't like it, but he doesn't hate it the way Clint does, like its existence is an affront to him personally. "We've gotta convince him not to stay when he's done with his murders," Clint says. Bucky follows his sightline down to the alleyway 10 stories below, where Jason is using his fists to help someone understand why they shouldn't bother trying to keep Joker's location a secret at this particular moment in time. "Agreed," Bucky says darkly. "We can bring him back for the occasional weekend if he gets homesick." "Yeah, good idea," Clint says. "Enrichment is important. Maybe we can—" "Hey, that's our cue," Bucky interrupts, as Jason's new friend pulls a knife. "Oh, never mind, he's got it." "He sure does." Finding the Joker turns into a non-issue, as someone tells him Jason is on the hunt for him, and he makes the job a lot easier by kidnapping Jason. Bucky doesn't take it all that well. "Fucking find him, or I swear to God, I'll break every single bone in every single one of every single bat's limbs," Bucky snarls down the phone at Oracle. Clint doesn't tell him to calm down, which means he's worried, which worries Bucky more. He's got enough rationality left to recognize that nobody will be able to find Jason if they've been preemptively murdered by Bucky, so he just growls and paces and looms as best he can while waiting for Oracle to do her thing. Clint is somewhere behind him, trying to cast a spell that should, in theory, work faster than whatever borderline illegal surveillance software Bats and/or Oracle are using this week. It's not working, which is a problem for a number of reasons that Bucky only half grasps. "The Joker must be doing something," Clint snaps in frustration. "I can feel Jason in the city, but his presence isn't localized. It's like he's in a cloud or a vapor or something. I can't pin down a location." Is he hurt? Bucky asks, but Clint can only shrug and try casting again.
Paris Island,
Oracle says a moment later, voice thick with relief even over the crackly connection. Bucky's out the door before he realizes that means nothing to him. It doesn't matter. The location will be on his phone before he reaches his bike. Clint's behind him, and not for the first time, Bucky is so grateful for how well they work together. He doesn't have to slow down, even for half a second, or explain what he's doing. He can just act, secure in the knowledge that Clint will be acting too. Paris Island, according to his sat-nav, is 3 minutes away, two, a left turn, a bridge.
You have reached your destination.
He can see them, Jason and the Joker, edges caught in the bike's headlamp, glittering with rain because Gotham has a sense of humor, even if Joker doesn't. Jason's on his knees, bent over, one arm held awkwardly to his chest and the other barely supporting him. Bucky's off the bike and running, legs pounding, but it's taking forever and there's no way he'll get there in time, so he changes that. Time slows down, stretches out achingly, like someone has slammed on the brakes or hooked a bungee cord in his back. The journey to Jason's side takes 2 steps instead of 20, and Bucky doesn't know if he made the distance shorter, or his legs longer, or a secret third thing. Magic. It's that one. It's magic, and he's magic, and he can use magic. He uses magic now. Bucky can feel it thundering inside him, swirling around his pulse points like eddies in a stream, boiling hot and potent. And no wonder Clint couldn't believe he didn't know this was inside him. No wonder Jason thought it was weird they didn't talk about it. It's everything. It's power and primal and vital and rich, and it's inside him. It is him. He can bend the shape of the entire world to his whims. Even with his magic, it takes a fraction of a second to reach Jason, less than the blink of an eye. It's the length of time it takes him to think. It's nearly too long. Joker raises a crowbar and swings wildly. By the time the blow lands, Bucky's flicked his fingers and the crowbar has gone floppy. It slaps weakly past Jason's cheek, as limp as overcooked pasta, before bouncing gently onto the ground as Joker tosses it away with a cry of disgust. The puddle it lands in ripples, and Bucky can see red in the water. Howling with rage at his thwarted plan, Joker throws himself bodily at Jason, a screaming mess of flailing limbs and teeth, but something has snapped in Jason. Unfrozen, he's more than a match for Joker, even down one working arm, and it's a matter of seconds before he's got him on the ground, face down in the dirt with his arms twisted behind his back. Bucky wanders over and pulls out his gun. Want me to do it? Bucky asks, then hands his weapon over when Jason shakes his head. The shot is loud in the empty night, ringing out for ages with only the patter of rain on tarmac for company. The emotions on Jason's face are louder. Fuck, Jason whispers, falling against Bucky as his legs finally give out. Bucky takes his gun back and holsters it so he can wrap an arm around his back and hold him up. I thought it'd feel more real. But it feels like I can't trust it. Bucky hums thoughtfully and turns them both so they have a clear view of his body, now nothing more than a wet, crumpled heap. He reaches out with his magic and lets it turn a slice of air into a knife, cutting through cloth and skin and muscle and bone until his heart is exposed to the rain. With a flick of his hand, Bucky tears his heart out of its bony nest and raises it up into the air. When he squeezes his fingers into a tight fist, the heart twitches in the air, one last abortive attempt to beat, and then it shifts into dust, disintegrating as fast as the wind can carry it away. Just making sure, Bucky mutters, when he feels Jason turn to stare at him. Jason kisses him like the world is ending, or maybe like it's beginning. Bucky guesses it is for him. It doesn't much matter anyway. He kisses Jason back, cradles his cheek, and feels how cold it is, chilled to the bone from hours in the wind and rain. He calls for Clint, and once again, they don't have to talk. He doesn't even have to stop kissing Jason, can keep sucking on his bottom lip as Clint steps behind him and warms him with words whispered into his ears, his hair, the curve of his neck. Take me home, Jason asks. So, Bucky does that too. He reaches past him for Clint and holds all three of them tightly together, before twisting the universe just a little bit just tugging and nudging the tiniest fraction so that they're in their Bed-Stuy apartment and not freezing their asses off on a Gotham bridge. "Fuck, babe, that's big fucking magic," Clint murmurs. "Too much?" Bucky asks with a frown. Clint's shaking his head before his mouth is closed. "Nope, nope, it's perfect. You're perfect. Let me just patch Jason up and I'll show you exactly how perfect you were. Are." "Can I help?" Jason asks. Clint steers him towards the couch with hands too low on his hips not to be suggestive. "Medicine first, then flirting. But yes, absolutely. You can help as much as you want." It's the first time Bucky's seen Jason really, truly grin and mean it. Jason catches Bucky looking at his own cock with an unusual amount of interest when they're finished, after they've exhausted themselves on each other's bodies, but before any of them feel like moving. "I thought it might look different," Bucky says sheepishly. "What, like it's gonna be glowing or something?" Bucky shrugs noncommittally. No power in the multiverse would ever get him to admit that, yes, he had briefly entertained the idea that his dick might be glowing. Obviously not that, just, I don't know, it felt different. I thought it might look different, too. "Bad different?" Clint asks. He doesn't open his eyes, but he does fling an arm out to the side and start patting around until his hand lands on Bucky's belly, which he pats gently, if aimlessly. It's weirdly soothing. No, definitely good different," Bucky says. "I'm glad," Clint says sleepily. "Also glad your junk isn't glowing. Glad we got Jason, too. So many good things." Bucky can feel his magic ebbing away. Not gone forever. He might not know how he got it, but he's pretty confident it's here to stay. It's gone quiet, though, like it knows that he doesn't need it right now, or maybe he's used too much for a while and it's lying fallow. Either way, it's receding, fading out of his limbs. He can still feel it in his core, if he concentrates, a distant warmth rumbling inside him like a purring cat. It does feel like a good thing, he has to admit. Jason is watching him quietly, letting him have his thoughts. He doesn't protest when Bucky pulls him closer, arranging his limbs to fit him between him and Clint. "Don't run away again," Bucky murmurs quietly, tucking himself around Jason. "If you need space, we'll let you go, but don't disappear again." Jason doesn't answer, but he tangles his fingers up with Bucky's, and his other hand finds one of Clint's to hold on to, so Bucky feels okay to close his eyes. Just for a second, just to soak up this moment in time, so he can tuck it away and pull it out whenever he needs to feel like this again. The end.